I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. Our guest, journalist David K. Johnston, has been writing about Donald Trump ever since Trump tried to make it big in the casino business in Atlantic City, and Johnston was covering the gambling industry for the Philadelphia Inquirer. While Trump ended up having to declare bankruptcy, he still made millions of dollars while his investors lost out. Johnston says that Trump's ability to game the system, to flout the rules, defy the laws, and make money for himself and his family continued during his 4 years as president. For instance, he used a photo op during his inaugural parade to promote his D.C. hotel, which was used by lobbyists and foreign dignitaries. When Trump golfed at his clubs, the Secret Service was forced to pay full rate to rent rooms as they provide security. Trump claimed the Trump Organization was being run by his sons while he was in office through a blind trust that Johnston calls an eyes wide open blind trust. Now out of office, Trump is under investigation on several fronts, including by the New York Attorney General, who wants to depose him about potential fraud at the Trump Organization. David K. Johnston won a Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on our tax system, his co-founder and editor of DC Reports, which is a nonprofit news organization. He's not a lawyer, but he teaches at Syracuse University College of Law, and this is his eighth book. And David K. Johnston, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Well, thank you for having me, Marty. I appreciate it.
Very welcome. And let me just read something to our listeners. This is from the very first page of your book, your introduction. You write, Trump was a master huckster. He had successfully fleeced investors, cheated workers and vendors, ripped off students of his fake university, and outmaneuvered banks that loaned him more than $1 billion that he never paid back. He'd even cheated novice roulette players at one of his casinos in what was supposed to be the most heavily regulated industry in America. And he had gotten away with it. I want to talk about what he has done, but I think the sort of driving question is how he has been able to get away with it for decades now. How do you see that?
Well, fundamentally, we have very weak white-collar crime laws in America. Many, many people I've written about over the decades are essentially white-collar crooks. Donald is the third-generation head of a four-generation white-collar crime family that started out in the 1900s. That is the 1800s and the 19th century. His grandfather fled the draft in Germany, came to America, lied to become a citizen, ran what are basically whorehouses, built a hotel, not for sleeping, on property he didn't own. His father ripped off the taxpayers through a program to provide subsidized housing for the soldiers and GIs who survived World War II. And when Eisenhower found out about this, he threw a fit. His father ripped off, in today's money, about $40 million.
Wow. Wow.
And Donald, as soon as he got out of college from Penn, where he didn't earn a degree, but they gave him one, he made a beeline to the notorious Roy Cohn, Joe McCarthy's lawyer on Capitol Hill, and learned from Roy Cohn how to defeat law enforcement. You always attack law enforcement. They're illegitimate. They're the ones who are corrupt. And you never concede, no matter how obvious the facts are, at least not in public. And you delay, delay, delay. That's how he's gotten away with it.
Well, and I don't want to get ahead of the story here, but I'm thinking of Letitia James. She's the Attorney General of New York, and some others that are beginning to look at his use of our tax system and other things. Do you think the delay, delay, delay is finally catching up with the former president?
Oh, yeah. Donald managed for 4 years to prevent prosecutors in Manhattan from getting the business records held by his accounting firm. When they went to the Supreme Court twice, astonishing. And the courts took their own sweet time about it. But now those documents have been turned over. Why hasn't there been an indictment yet? Well, they turned over 5 million pages, and the prosecutors have to go through all of them. There was a, back in 1990, Marty, there was a Casino Control Commission hearing, and Donald knew that I wanted a particular one-page document. And yet men came in with dollies, and they filled the entire wall, floor to ceiling, with banker's boxes. And Donald tapped me on the shoulder and went, lots of luck. One of the detectives.
The needle in the haystack problem,
yes,
right?
One of the detectives tipped me to which box and which file number. Oh. So when the hearing was over, I got it. But that's the kind of strategy he pulls to make it difficult to go after him. And he's run out the clock in the past on four federal grand juries.
Well, we will see. And I'm going to ask you to get a little bit inside the head of Donald Trump. But even going back to the 2015 announcement, as you said, these were paid supporters that we heard cheering for him as he and his wife came down the escalator. But nonetheless, do you think he really wanted to be president of the United States, or was it more about attention or thinking he could make essentially money off the deal?
Well, all of those things are true, and they're not inconsistent. Donald has been talking about being president since the 1980s. He said in 2011, when he dropped out of the campaign for president, that of course he should be president. No one else in America has qualified to be president, but at the moment my TV show needs me more. He's always seen this as an opportunity to make money and to become our dictator, which is what he set out to do once he was in office. He didn't expect to get elected in 2016, but he won the Electoral College.
Yep.
And he immediately embraced with gusto how to monetize the White House. And I warned people back in 2015 that if Donald got to the White House, he would not live peacefully. So far, all of my predictions about Donald from before he took office, my batting average has been holding steady at 1,000.
Which is a rare batting average these days. But, you know, going back, and I do want to talk about what happened during his administration, but even going back to the early days and this message that he had about draining the swamp and, you know, the little guy, I realize there was a lot of racist rhetoric that was embedded in that. But nonetheless, this idea that the system is really designed for rich people and not for you, to his supporters, is correct. I mean, whether it was, you know, the wrong messenger but right message.
Marty, you're absolutely correct about that. And many of the lines Donald used in his campaign, he got from me, from my best-selling trilogy on the American economy about taxes, subsidies, and monopolies. And I know that he studied what I said on TV about those books because I had people who know both of us who told me that he had called them and asked questions. And Donald tapped into something. Here's a simple fact. 90% of Americans in 2019 reported a smaller income than in 1973. Now,
wow.
I'm adjusting for inflation.
Sure.
Then add on to that, healthcare is vastly more expensive, and instead of being an add-on from your employer, they take it out of your paycheck, and you have big co-pays. Add on to that, that for every dollar of equity people have added in home value, they've taken on $2 of debt. And most people don't have good retirement plans or pensions anymore. So all of that together means that 90% of Americans are worse off almost a half century later. And they're angry, and they're legitimately angry. I wrote my three books about exactly that, the three economics books.
Well, let me play a clip. And this is actually a montage we took from CNN. And this is candidate Donald Trump from a series of speeches during his presidential campaign. And he is highlighting his wealth. Let's give it a listen.
Here's the good news. I'm very rich. I don't need anybody's money. It's nice. I'm really rich.
I'm the most successful person ever to run.
Fortunately, I'm very rich. So I have a total net worth. And now with the increase, it'll be well over $10 billion. I'm not doing that to brag, because you know what? I don't have to brag. I don't have to, believe it or not.
Doesn't have to brag, but nonetheless, there he is bragging about how much money he has. David, from your perspective, how rich is Donald Trump? Maybe then and now.
Well, back in 1990, I broke the story in the Philadelphia Inquirer that Donald wasn't even close to being a billionaire. He went around calling me a liar for 4 months, and then he had to put in the record his banker's assessment of his net worth, and it was minus $300 million. And the Inquirer, this piece I wrote in the Inquirer, which we ran above the masthead on the front page, began with, this is from memory, not exact, "You are probably worth more than Donald Trump."
Wow, that was 1990.
1990. There has never been a scintilla of verifiable evidence that Donald is worth even $1 billion. And when he became president, he asked if he could file his financial disclosure form without signing it under penalty of perjury. And he was told, no, you have to sign it. 90% of his wealth disappeared. He claimed about $1.7 billion or $1.4 billion in that document compared to his more than 10 as a candidate. And even that, a lot of the values were grossly inflated, and we don't know for sure about all of his debts.
He said he could not release his tax forms because they were being audited. Is that the way it works, David?
No. In fact, Richard Nixon was under audit when he released his returns. Once you sign your tax return under penalty of perjury, making it public doesn't change anything. The reason he didn't want to give it back was what he's under audit for is a refund that he got. Back in 2017, someone, I believe to be Donald, mailed me his tax return for the year 2005. And what it showed was that he paid a lower tax rate on an income of $3 million a week than Americans who made $300 a week. And then he paid something called the alternative minimum tax, which he got refunded later. And that refund is what was being challenged. So, no, he just wanted to hide his tax return.
But it does tell us, I mean, the question we have, it, as you well know, David K. Johnson, you got a Pulitzer Prize for this. But our tax system is unbelievably complicated, but it also allows people to sort of game it for their own advantage, especially if they are wealthy.
Indeed. And the day Donald announced in 2015, I dropped a project that was almost done that I'm now back finishing. I have designed an entirely new tax system for the U.S. Every expert who's gone over it, tax administrators, business owners, business lawyers, tax lawyers, they all agree that it would work. It would be simple. It would make the country much wealthier. It's a very simple thing. And just today, ProPublica, which got lots of very wealthy people's tax returns, has reported yet again how super wealthy people are able to turn hobbies into paper tax losses and how they can go multi-billionaires, actual billionaires, unlike Donald, who go years and years and years and don't pay a dime in federal income tax. We need to stop that.
It's infuriating. We're almost having a break here. Does it matter how rich Donald Trump is?
Well, not in the least. I mean, presidents get a nice salary. We could increase it if we think it's not sufficient. But what does wealth tell you? I'm sorry, I grew up in an America where I was told that virtue and wisdom were what you were to seek to attain. If you got wealthy, that's nice. And I'm glad people become wealthy. But that's not the purpose of a life or our Constitution. It's to have a citizenry who are informed and make wise choices so that we maximize our liberty and that our society endures as a place of free peoples.
We are going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation with David K. Johnston. He's got a new book. It's his eighth. He's written several books about former President Donald Trump, this one titled The Big Cheat, How Donald Trump Fleeced America and Enriched Himself and His Family. You can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with David K. Johnston. He's an investigative journalist. In fact, has been writing about Donald Trump ever since Trump opened his casinos in Atlantic City. He had to sell them or shutter them and declare bankruptcy. And David K. Johnston has been covering him ever since. We're talking about his new book. This will be David K. Johnston's new book, The Big Cheat, How Donald Trump Fleeced America and Enriched Himself and His Family. Let me play another clip. And this is then-candidate Donald Trump responding to a reporter's question about the Trump University lawsuit. And this is February 2016.
Excuse me. That's a civil case. I've won much of it. Excuse me, Sarah. I've won much of it. It's a peanut case. It's a very small case. I will end up winning. I could have settled it many times. I decided not to settle it. I could settle it now. I don't want to settle it. Excuse me. I go through court. I go through court often. I win the cases. I have a very good record. And I don't like, this is just people wanting to get their money back. Most of these people signed report cards. It's called a report card, where they said how great it was. Then they sue you years later to see if they get their money back. So we'll win the case. It'll take a little while, but we'll win the case. Much of the case has already been won.
He lost the case. He had to pay $25 million, David K. Johnston, as a result of this lawsuit against Trump University. What does that tell us about him?
Well, Donald is the most successful con artist in the history of the world. And in this case, he conned desperate people into, they were going to learn from professors personally picked by Donald. He said, you'll get a better education than at the finest business schools. In fact, the people who taught were dishwashers, fast food restaurant managers who had no experience. And the first thing that happened is they were shown how to get on the phone and coach to take out huge credit card lines. They then gave the money to Trump University, which meant they no longer had any capacity for down payments to acquire real estate. And Donald had to admit under oath he never knew who any of the faculty were after his claim that he'd personally picked them all. This was a scam from day one, and he perfectly well knew it.
And then there's the Trump Foundation as well that got into hot water.
Yes. The Donald J. Trump Foundation was funded basically by people doing business with him. Comcast in Philadelphia, the World Wrestling Federation. They're the ones who put the real money into it. And I show in the book how Donald then used the foundation to harm children's charities, particularly children with cancer who go to St. Jude's in Memphis, and to make money for the family. It's really quite clever. I mean, I admire Donald's skill as a con artist and a manipulator.
Well, let me ask you, and I mentioned this in my introduction to the show, and you also write about the D.C. hotel that he bought and ran while as president. And was a place where foreign dignitaries would go and other lobbyists and others who were looking to do business with the Trump administration. Yet it's not clear to me, did he make any money off of that hotel?
Well, the financial documents Donald filed showed a $71 million loss at the end of his presidency, which, if true, means there were fewer people who needed to pay him tribute than were people who didn't need to and didn't go to his hotel. And, of course, seeking favors in Washington, I've never sought one. I assume you've never sought one.
Nope.
It's a very concentrated business. And Donald, however, is arranged to sell the hotel for what looks to be, if we can believe the announcement, a $100 million profit. But there's a deeper issue here, Marty, and that is we never had a president before who tried to monetize the presidency. Jimmy Carter put his little peanut warehouse, a two-bit mom-and-pop business, into a trust. Previous presidents like Obama and George W. Bush, Ronald Reagan, they put their money into either federal debt treasuries or broad-indexed mutual funds, and they had no control over them, and they didn't know how the money was invested. Donald Trump's trust allowed him to hear about how the businesses were doing, to reach into the businesses and take cash whenever he needed or wanted it. And that's inherently corrupting. That's why we have two emoluments clauses in the Constitution. So this is a real problem. And at the end of my book, after the 18 vignettes I lay out about what they were doing to give you a picture, a comprehensive and understandable narrative of what was happening, I list a bunch of solutions. And one of them is no more of allowing a president to run a business while he's in the White House.
And I do want to get to that. But let me just, while we're talking about the hotel, you quote Zach, is it Everson? He was
Everson.
Yeah. He's a travel journalist. And it started, he stayed at the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C., and he saw that it was largely empty. So on the one hand, you know, he's got this hotel. I've been by it. It's an extraordinarily beautiful building. And people are concerned about lobbyists and foreign dignitaries there. But when Zach Everson goes there, it's largely a ghost hotel.
Well, at the end, there were periods when a guy running for vice president in Nigeria, a major trading partner of the U.S., came just to get footage to show back home to imply that he was connected to Donald. The head of T-Mobile America, the German cell phone company, made a big show of repeatedly going to the hotel and ultimately got a $26 billion deal, the approval of purchasing Sprint. And so the Saudis rented out two whole floors at one point. The Kuwaiti government moved its annual celebration, its Freedom Day, from another hotel to Donald's hotel to make sure they stayed in his good graces. So this is where you went to pay tribute, but you could also go to the Doral Country Club in Miami or his golf course in Westchester. You just had to make sure Donald knew you'd paid tribute.
Well, it's interesting because the General Services Administration, you mentioned the Emoluments Clause, they gave then-President Donald Trump, as I understand it, the green light. Now, the Inspector General criticized the GSA for their decision, but nonetheless, you know, here we are. Looks like it was at least, according to the GSA, it was legal for him to own this.
Yeah, and what the Inspector General shows, and this chapter is all about the farce of how the GSA did that. They made it a point to not read things or look at things, and they said so when the Inspector General came calling. This was a farce. And why would we expect that bureaucrats who are career civil servants hoping to end up with a pension at the end of their life after their service to risk their future by enraging a president of the United States and enforcing what's been law in America since 1808, that a member of Congress, a president, cannot have a financial interest in a lease with the federal government.
And yet he did.
he got away with it, and it's one of the things that shows. Here's the problem Donald Trump revealed. 44 presidents, whatever you think of them, like them or hate them, all tried to do what they thought was best for the U.S., Donald Trump comes along, all he thinks about is what's best for him and his family. He talks openly about remaining in the White House till he dies and having his daughter Ivanka and his son Don Jr. be the future leaders of the country because he was a wannabe dictator. And he didn't hide it. He said it. And his supporters may say, oh, he was joking. This is not a matter one jokes about.
And that is David K. Johnston. We're talking about his new book. It's his eighth book. It's titled The Big Cheat, How Donald Trump Fleeced America and Enriched Himself and His Family. David got a Pulitzer Prize for his coverage of our tax system and covered Donald Trump back in the early days of casinos in Atlantic City when David was working for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And again, any questions or comments, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. David, I want to play another clip, and this is January 7th, 2017. President-elect Donald Trump is explaining that he put his business in a trust to be run by his sons, but he also explains that he believes as president he is exempt from conflict of interest laws. Let's give it a quick listen.
I have a no conflict of interest provision as president. It was many, many years old. This is for presidents because they don't want presidents getting I understand. They don't want presidents getting tangled up in minutiae. They want a president to run the country. So I could actually run my business. I could actually run my business and run government at the same time. I don't like the way that looks, but I would be able to do that if I wanted to. I'd be the only one that would be able to do that. You can't do that in any other capacity. But as a president, I could run the Trump Organization. Great, great company. And I could run the company, the country. I'd do a very good job, but I don't want to do that.
So much there to unpack, David K. Johnston. Could he have run his country? I'm getting company and country mixed up the way the former president did. But could he have run his company and the country at the same time?
No, and he shouldn't be able to. Among other things, Donald never read Article 2 of our Constitution, and the limits it placed on the presidency. He said at one point when he was president, I've got an Article 2 that says I can do anything. No, it's not what it says at all, not even close. And Donald presents a emoluments problem. The Constitution says a president while serving may not receive any emolument. That's an 18th century word for money, gain, profit, very broad word to cover any financial benefit from a foreign power or the states. Well, he had state agencies, police and others, renting rooms to protect him while he was president. That violates the Emoluments Clause. He had foreign governments putting money into his businesses. That violates the Emoluments Clause. Ben Franklin, the most famous citizen of Philadelphia, there was a huge scandal when he came back as our ambassador to France with a gift box, a jeweled snuff box, over whether he could accept such a gift or it was inherently corrupting. And so Donald's just wrong about that. And furthermore, I show in the book that Donald and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, endangered American national security in very significant ways as the Kushner family sought financial help, a bailout from countries in the Middle East.
Well, and my understanding now is that Jared is in the Middle East, working on some business there.
He's trying to raise, and I'm sure he will raise, billions of dollars to further his business interests. And Donald actually attacked Qatar after the Qataris wouldn't make a loan to the Kushner family and accused them of all sorts of terrible things. Qatar is where we have our most important Middle East military base. It's where Central Command's operations headquarters is. And he took the side of the Saudis and the Emiratis against the Qataris. He said that Qatar is financing terrorists. Well, they do. They finance two terrorist organizations. The Saudis finance 60 and put in much, much more money. Of course, part of this is Donald knows nothing of the Middle East, of the politics there. He doesn't know a Sunni from a Shia. If you ask him about Wahhabism, he'd look at you and say, what, is that a new restaurant?
Let me read some comments. This is an email from Dan. He says, what do you think is Trump's main motivation, wealth or being so smart to game the system and fleece everyone he encounters? He continually explains that he doesn't pay his vendors, lawyers, etc., because they did shoddy work. If he's such a good businessman, how does he continue to choose duds to work for him? Can you speak to that? I mean, we touched on this early on, but responding to Dan.
Yeah. There are so many people in America that you just move from one con to another. So Donald rips you off and ruins your business. Well, there's another vendor out there, and he'll take a flyer, and he'll believe he's going to get paid. And you keep moving on. That's what the art of the deal talks about. I mean, the art of the deal, he brags about lying and committing fraud and everything from his dealings with the Holiday Inns, his partners in his first casino, to golf. And so Donald, it's just who he is. He is a thief, and he doesn't believe the rules apply to him. He's special. That's why nobody else in America, I alone, can save you.
Right. Here's a comment from Stewart, and I'll just read some of it. This is about Donald Trump. He appears to have support of half of the country. He seems to have tapped into the psychology of the common working man, I guess a woman. How does such a man do this? But it needs to be said that he still has the majority support of Republicans. They believe that Joe Biden is an illegitimate president, that Trump won in spite of, every lawsuit under the sun saying that, the 2020 election was fair and that Biden is a legitimate president. But nonetheless, you've got so many members of the Republican Party who do not believe that, David.
Right. Well, this is an astonishing development. Democracy doesn't work if we don't deal with what the framers of our Constitution intended, which is rational debate about facts. And we can have angry, robust debate, but it has to ultimately have a factual basis. Donald is really masterful at speaking to people's hearts. During the 2016 campaign, Donald would say, I'm your hero. I'm the only one who can save you. Hillary Clinton would say, blah, 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 blah. Oh, and by the way, 31 points here, blah, 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 blah. And it came across to people as wonky memos in a bureaucratic sense that didn't touch their pocketbooks and their hearts. Now, that Donald promised to drain the swamp, and then as soon as he got to Washington, turned it into a paradise for the worst predators on Wall Street, something that should have been obvious to people coming in. But how many people really understand high finance?
Well, as you write here, even the most ardent Trump supporters should realize by now that he sold us a bill of goods. There's no plan for infrastructure. There was no plan to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula, no plan to lower drug prices, never a replacement or improvement for Obamacare. I mean, that may be correct, but as you seem to be saying, David, is that we're not dealing with facts. We're dealing with people's emotions.
Right. And both parties are at fault here for what's happened to the economics of about 90% of Americans. The campaign finance reforms after Watergate have forced members of Congress and the Senate to realize that their real constituency is not voters, it's campaign donors. And that's why I run a news service, DC Report, singular, where we cover what politicians do, not what they say. And we've broken many, many stories showing how the rule book of the government is being rewritten to favor the wealthy, the powerful, and the worst behaving businesses against ordinary Americans, because there's no constituency in Washington for Joe Sixpack and Joan Sixpack.
It also, and this continues under Biden and the Democrats, who have a small but nonetheless have a majority in Congress.
Yes, although let me point out that Donald promised 6% GDP growth. He was below the average of the post-war era. And each year he was in office, GDP growth was slower. 3% the first year, then 2.2, and then a little under 2. And then, of course, the reversal during the pandemic year. Mm-hmm. Under Biden, we hit 7% GDP growth. We've created 6 million jobs. There's been a huge bounce back, and he got an infrastructure bill passed, whereas Trump never even put his forward, even though he had both the House and the Senate in his party for the first 2 years.
And we're almost having a break here, and yet Biden's support is something in the low 40s.
Yeah, the Democrats in the White House don't know how to sell ice cream to children in July, Marty.
Truly?
Yeah, they don't know how to communicate. I was on Al Franken's podcast the other day. He agreed with me about that. And at the end of it, he said, you know, Democratic bumper stickers all end with the phrase, continue on next bumper sticker.
Okay. I hear you. Well, here's a tweet from one of our listeners. No rules for the rich. This show is exposing it. We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation with David K. Johnston. And he's got a new book. It's his eighth, as I mentioned earlier. It's called The Big Cheat, How Donald Trump Fleeced America and Enriched Himself and His Family. And I do want to talk about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Who benefited? Who didn't? We also want to hear more from you. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe, talking with David K. Johnston about former President Donald Trump. David, let me play one more clip. This goes back actually to May 2016. So this is before the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. But he's on Good Morning America. And George Stephanopoulos is asking then candidate Trump about his tax rate.
What is your tax rate?
It's none of your business. You'll see it when I release. But I fight very hard to pay as little tax as possible.
That is true, is it not, David K. Johnston?
Yes. And by the way, something very few people know, a story I broke in 2016. Donald has had two income tax fraud trials. Now, these were civil, not criminal fraud. He lost them both. And he actually forged his own tax return. He had a tax return prepared by the family's longtime tax lawyer and CPA. And Donald didn't like that return, so he created a forgery and filed the forgery as his own lawyer testified under oath.
Well, again, and this is a refrain, I mean, how do you get away with that? I mean, a regular person could not get away with that.
Oh, people get away with all sorts of stuff.
I know that, but still.
Most murder cases are not solved in this country, so... tax law, we have cut the IRS to just sort of nothing. One of the chapters in the book is about the man who lives two doors from Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago, who's collected $1 billion plus without paying any taxes through a flat-out scam. We call it the Koch papers. It's the third Koch brother. Mm. He has no objection to our story about my story about this, by the way, and the facts that are in it. But the IRS had this man under criminal investigation. Donald gets elected president. The IRS drops the case.
Wow. Well, let me ask you about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And later on, Trump does have another interview with George Stephanopoulos where he says, I think I'll probably end up paying more under this tax, this new tax cut. What's the truth about that?
I'm laughing. He got up to a 40% tax cut under the law he signed. It was just nonsense by Donald about this. The tax cuts in 2017, which there was not a single public hearing about them. It was only Republicans who voted for them, unlike Ronald Reagan's tax reform, where there was massive public hearing and research before they were enacted. Overwhelmingly favored the richest people in America and the biggest corporations. And ordinary people, many of them got a little bit of a tax cut. Many people like me are paying higher taxes under the 2017 Jobs and Tax Cut Act. And the tax cuts are not tax cuts, Marty, because all the money was borrowed, which means the people who had their tax burden reduced put onto all of us the cost of that along with interest because they never paid for themselves.
And here we are fighting about Build Back Better and how to pay for it.
Right. And one of the things I've written a DC report about is Joe Biden goes out and says, you know, we need $3.5 trillion. Well, that's not how to sell this. It's less than $3 a day per American to invest in a wealthier future. But that's not how when I tell you the White House can't sell ice cream to kids in July, that's what I mean.
Let me read some more comments. Beth writes, I visited the tiny County Clare town of Doonbeg, where Trump has a hotel and golf course. The once lovely estate is now in disrepair, very run down. The locals I talked to have nothing but loathing for Trump, even as many of them worked at Doonbeg and were not paid their wages. They also said that he once purchased the place. Trump never put a dime to the upkeep. His cheating and scams have left a bitter taste in the mouths of many Irish. David, your thoughts?
Yes, well, and Donald saw to it that we put a lot of taxpayer money into renting rooms there. Mike Pence went way out of his way to stay there. Another one of his golf courses, he had the U.S. military radically increase the number of flights they made there. We're jetting up the plane. The fuel cost a lot more money than elsewhere. And he had the officers flying the plane stay at his place because he was propping it up.
Here's another one. Here's an email from Janine. I would like to know whatever happened to the Baja Resort project that was a misleading enterprise that he and Ivanka promoted in order to get people to invest in condominiums, supposedly under the Trump banner. What investors didn't know was that Trump merely leased the Trump name to a building on this project, but his ads about the project were very misleading. What happened to this? Do you know, David?
Yes, I do. That story is told in The Making of Donald Trump, the biography I wrote of him in 2016. And the project failed. There was a settlement, and it was sealed. So people got back a little bit of their money. But it was, as I show in the book, quoting from the testimony and the documents, it was another just flat-out scam in which Ivanka was so involved, she met with potential investors and would say to them, oh, well, I'm getting a unit, too. Perhaps I'll have to come by and borrow a cup of sugar. Wouldn't that be nice?
Let me ask you about Jared and Ivanka. You write they made between $172 million and $640 million while holding unpaid White House jobs, saying this poses a serious question about the intersection of their financial interests and U.S. national security. That's a broad between $172 and $640. Why don't we know how much they made?
Because the federal financial disclosure forms are done in broad categories, not specific dollars. And Donald himself said, these forms are not designed for a man of my great wealth. And you know what? That he's 100% right about. We need to increase and improve financial disclosure. And the top category of $50 million is inadequate. We need to have $100 million, $250 million, a billion.
That's a lot of money. You mentioned some of the recommendations. One is don't allow a president to hire members of their family. I mean, he is certainly not the first president to do that. But it seems that seems pretty obvious in 2021.
Yeah, nepotism is something we should always avoid. He wants to have members of the family as advisors. You know, that's fine. Every president counts on their spouse as an advisor, of course. But putting them in a position in the White House, Jared Kushner, even though he repeatedly had to amend his SF-86. That's the document you fill out if you want a security clearance. Got a security clearance on Donald Trump's orders. He denied that, but we know that that's what happened now. And he was using this for his own personal financial benefit in the Middle East. That's absolutely outrageous.
Let me ask you about what's happening now with Letitia James. She's the Attorney General of New York. She is going after, I think would be an appropriate word, but she, you know, she wants to sit down and talk to him. And this is about how he has used the system and how he has valued his various properties. David, help us understand what she thinks he is doing.
Sure. I've challenged the assessment of my house for property tax purposes, and the difference was, $30,000, and we split the difference. Right. But in Donald's case, he claims his golf course in Westchester is worth $1.4 million, but he's put on his presidential form $50 million, and he said publicly well over $100 million. That kind of a difference is fraud. He did the same thing with his building 40 Wall Street. He did the same thing with his mansion in Westchester County, Seven Springs. He bought it for, if I recall, $7 million. He's claimed at one point it was worth $291 million. And what Donald would do is on a tax form, he would give a super low value, but when borrowing money or seeking an insurance reimbursement, he would put a number, in some cases, 30, 40, 50 times higher. Well, that's fraud. And he's been noticed for a deposition, that is testimony under oath. He's undoubtedly going to fight that and argue that that's really a backdoor way to get testimony from him that can be used by the New York City, the Manhattan District Attorney, who has a criminal investigation and who I expect will bring a New York State racketeering charge against Donald Trump.
Oh, a RICO charge.
Yes, New York State has a RICO law, Article 460 of the Penal Code. And one of the things I teach my students at Syracuse. And I believe that that's what the case will ultimately be. And when I was the first person to say this, I don't know, 2 years ago, and you'll now notice it's commonly said by former prosecutors, defense lawyers, and others who, after checking out the law, say, yeah, that makes more sense than the tax charge.
So the law is on the law side versus the former president's side.
Yeah, this is, I think Donald's got real problems with several cases. The Fulton County, Georgia district attorney over trying to interfere with the election in Georgia, where there's that tape-recorded conversation between Trump and Brad Raffensperger, the state elections official, the attorney general of the District of Columbia, who's looking into what happened to the $107 million raised by his inaugural committee. And I tell the story in there of how they tried to get Melania Trump's former best friend to commit crimes and hide money, take money off the books. That's under investigation. He's under investigation in Westchester County. And we don't know what the Justice Department, the Federal Justice Department, is doing, but they may well have their own inquiry underway.
Here's a tweet from Roy, picking up on what you just said there. Isn't there enough evidence out in the public when it comes to Trump's attempt to interfere in the election of Georgia to indict him on some sort of election fraud with just the audio tapes already heard? Why do we need an investigation? And there is the January 6th investigation that is ongoing. Apparently, they have talked to something like 300 people. Right. So they're obviously making some progress.
I don't know why there hasn't been an indictment in Georgia. I agree that the tape by itself is pretty damning evidence, and I'm sure the prosecutors have their reasons. There's also a lot of concern by prosecutors that about going after a former president. I mean, you know, France and Israel, for example, are prosecuting former presidents. We've never done that in America, and that's a can of worms once you do open it up. The reason the Manhattan grand jury hasn't responded is, as I mentioned earlier in the show, they turned over 5 million pages of documents, and they have to go through every single one of them so they aren't hit with a surprise at trial.
Here's an email from Philip. Says, I don't disagree with anything that has been said on the program, but I'm always concerned that this will come off, how this will come off to the other side. I fear that this reporter, this book is just preaching to the choir. Is that a legitimate concern? At what point do we stop caring how we are going to be perceived by the other side when we are sticking to the facts of the matter? And let me just say, why did we have David K. Johnson on the show? Well, I've interviewed him multiple times, including a time when he was covering Atlantic York City for the Philadelphia Inquirer. So we're very careful about the guests that we book on the show to make sure that they've done their homework, that the facts are on their side and not just kind of wild speculation. But anyway, David, go ahead.
Well, this is a real problem. I mean, there are a lot of people who do not want to hear any set of facts that will disrupt their belief that Donald Trump is a god. And there are a lot of people who see him as a god or a demigod. And not Gog, God, demigod, half god. This is a real problem. And I don't know the solution to that problem. What I know is that for more than 50 years, I've been documenting bad policies, corruption, solving crimes, including murders, getting innocent people freed. And everything I've ever done in my life has held up. In fact, in my three Trump books, there's one error, a single word that has nothing directly to do with Donald Trump, because my books always have my email and I ask readers to get in touch with me. And the two previous books were sold all over the world. As this one, I presume, is being sold all over the world. It's just only been out a few days, so I don't know. But one word, and not directly on Donald Trump, because I'm meticulously careful about my facts. That's why Donald, who would call me at home all the time or stop me in person and yell, tell me he's going to sue me, and I'd say, Donald, if you have a case, sue me. But he never has, because he knows I always have my facts bolted down. As for changing people's minds, I don't know. I that's another business and not the business I'm in, which is investigative reporting.
And you don't use anonymous sources?
No, I use named sources and verifiable documents. The only exceptions to that are conversations that I've had directly with Donald, which I reported at the time, and Donald didn't object to.
Deborah wants to know, have you ever gotten threats from the Trump family? I mean, it sounds like you've gotten veiled threats from Donald himself.
Yeah, I mean Donald, there's a blurb on the back of my book where Donald calls me the weird dude. But, you know, no, I'm not worried about threats. Even when I was writing about LAPD officers who were murdering people for profit, I had six little kids at home. I had my home address and phone number in the phone book.
Let me ask you about this. This is a little bit off what we're talking about, but nonetheless, it happened last night, and I was watching Representative Liz Cheney, a Republican from Wyoming, is part of the January 6th committee, and she was reading emails that were sent from Fox contributors, people like Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity, and others to Meadows, who was at that time dealing with Donald Trump as the insurrection was taking place. Here's one from Ingraham. Mark, the president needs to tell the people in the Capitol to go home. This is hurting all of us. He is destroying his legacy. There are other comments like that as well. What do you make of the fact that they were sending them to Mark Meadows and going on the air and saying very different things?
Right. None of this has been mentioned on Fox News, and if they ever do, it'll be at 4 o'clock in the morning on Saturday. Fox News is not a news organization. It is a commentary site that focuses on lying, mendacity, and twisting facts into pretzels. I used to be on Fox all the time, and I got banned, I think it was in 2008, for one too many times correcting a host who said something that just wasn't factual. That it is just the standard order of business at Fox that you imply to people that the vaccines aren't needed. Well, you're required to get vaccinated or work in a separate workspace at Fox, and all of their hosts have been vaccinated. But people who believe Fox believe they're the only honest source of news, which says a lot about what's happened to critical thinking skills in America.
We have about 30 seconds. Do you have hope for America?
Yes. I mean, if Donald gets back in, it'll be the end of our democracy, and down that path lie firing squads. But I believe if people don't give into Trump fatigue and stay focused, that we will get past this. I wrote this book so that all these loose threads of things people might have or might not have heard or seen were woven together in a tapestry so they can understand what the Trumps were doing.
We've got to leave it there. David K. Johnson, thank you for joining us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. And the book is called The Big Cheat, How Donald Trump Fleeced America and Enriched Himself and His Family. To replay this hour, many more programs, go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under programs, or you can download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter at WHYY Radio Times, and you can also find us on Facebook. Charlie Kyer, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray-Bessler. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.